up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello, Vaughan Bennison with you again for this edition of New Horizons. Thanks for joining me. Today on the program, we go back to the Roundtable on Information Access for People with a Print Disability, and we hear on this occasion from Leah Van Poppel, CEO of Blind Citizens Australia. She's going to talk about the digital divide between people who are blind or have low vision and their sighted counterparts, and also some areas in the blind and vision impaired community that cause people some difficulty with access. And she starts now with an example.
And in giving a real world example, I'm hoping half of the room doesn't break out in hives because I'm about to talk about Centrelink. Everyone who has any contact with Centrelink has very little positive to say about it. We know that regardless of whether or not you have a disability, Centrelink tends to speak and write in bureaucrat, so accessing their information is really difficult. You can call their information lines and three times and get often at least three different answers. So you might end up with more. But beyond that, there's a divide for people who are blind or vision impaired or who have a print disability in that that system is quite paper bound. So to be able to get anything, you need to have printed out a form and signed it. If you need to hand in medical information, you've got to get that signed off and have a paper copy of it. So it's a system that already relies a lot on people accessing the system through other people's goodwill. And it kind of assumes that. And that assumption, I think, has flowed on to the way they're starting to implement digital engagement. So at the moment, the government is starting to use something called MyGov. It's a website that's intended over time to be used for a whole lot of government interactions that individuals have. So Centrelink, Medicare, immigration, a whole range of things are going to go through MyGov eventually. And MyGov is actually really good if you can use it well. You can go in and update your details. You can kind of keep track of the contacts that you've had with Centrelink. You can do it at any time of the day or the night. And so for the people who can use it, that's actually a really wonderful system, as long as it's working well. And we know that when they've made updates to MyGov, we tend to hear from our members that sometimes there are glitches in terms of the accessibility. So we know that even as they're implementing new digital measures, they're not necessarily taking into account people with disability. But then there are the people who can't access MyGov because they don't have a computer, or they're not very confident at using the internet for a wide range of things. So those people end up in long queues. So at the moment, I think it's averaging about an hour on the phone, on hold, to be able to get in touch with Centrelink. And Centrelink had implemented a callback option so that people can get someone to call them back rather than going through a queue if you enter a number. But that's been temporarily suspended. And when it was in place, I think you needed an email address to actually access it. So for something that's designed to assist people who can't access the internet, it's perhaps not the most ideal of systems. And we know that that has real long-term impacts on people. So, if you simply want to change your address with Centrelink, and you have to do that in order to be able to get correspondence from them, and you don't have an hour to sit on the phone, or your disability, some people who are vision impaired acquire their vision impairment through acquired brain injury, and that can sometimes lead to short-term memory issues as well. So you can imagine somebody sitting on the phone for that length of time. It's a really difficult undertaking, and that's all without considering the whole music that you have to listen to while you're there. So we know that this is the problem. We know there's a divide, but exactly who is it affecting? So some of the divide is based on age. The Australian Bureau of Statistics does a survey called the Survey of Disability, Ageing and Carers every few years. And in 2009, they found that 90% of people who are 15 to 25 years old who have a disability are accessing the internet. So the younger generation is jumping on in there. But that drops to 25% for people who are over 65. So we see a real correlation with a lack of internet confidence among people who are older. And we can see that there's probably some hypotheses that we can draw around that. So if you're young, you're a young person, you're given access to technology very early on in your life. It's integrated into your education. It's one of the ways that you access information, so you embrace it. And even if you are, of working age, you might lose your sight at that age, but you then have access to workplace modifications. You might have already been using a computer, and you've got a lot of motivation because you want to stay employed, you want to be able to keep in touch with people the way you always have done. So you have a lot of motivation to get engaged, even if you acquire a disability. But if you're over 65, you might not have that computer confidence to begin with, so it's a much steeper learning curve for those people. And the sorts of supports and services that are out there aren't nearly as structured if you're over the age of 65. There's another group who are also affected by this. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics, again, found that people who have a severe or profound disability, so that's measured by their core activity limitations, what people can do for themselves day to day in terms of getting around or getting dressed, communicating with other people, the people with the most severe limitations in those areas tend to use the internet and computers in general less. And when they use the internet, they're using it for different things. So people who have those severe disabilities tend to use it less for economic purposes like banking or shopping, less for education and less for employment, and more for just contacting their family and friends. So that says something about, you know, the differences in connection to society and the differences in the ability of people who have multiple disabilities or more severe disabilities, so people who might not just have blindness but be deafblind or blind with a physical disability, but they face some very, very different challenges. But what we do know is that whoever is affected, there are, whether it be older people, whether it's people with multiple disabilities, those people at the end of the digital divide need some supports to be able to cross the digital divide or to be able to live comfortably within the zone of perhaps not being a part of the digital community. And at the moment, those kind of supports are quite patchy. We know that if you think about bringing people into the digital world, you need to have good access to aids and equipment that are going to help you get there, and you need the training to be able to use them. There are many, many aids and equipment programs. I think at last count, when someone tallied it up, it was over 100 across the country. And all of them have very different criteria for access. And many of them exclude blindness or vision impairment or don't prioritise it. And within that, many of those schemes are also about very specific purposes. So you might find that there are aids and equipment programs that are suited to people who are blind or vision impaired, but they're scholarship programs for younger people or for people entering employment. So again, for people who are maybe less likely to be entering employment because they have multiple disabilities, or for people who are over the age of 65, that's a real issue. We know that that's not going to be an easy fix, and we know that we have to keep our eye on that ball as both the National Disability Insurance Scheme and My Aged Care roll out. So we know that one of the things that we have to be sure of in order to fix the digital divide is making sure that all of the programs designed for people with disability to access a community adequately represent their digital needs. We also know that the journey doesn't stop there. So you have your aids and your equipment, you've gotten a bit of training maybe on top of that. So training is not necessarily consistent across the country, and it's at the moment quite hard to interrogate what might be good training for a particular person. We know that once you've got those things, you then have to get onto the internet and use your computer well. And we know that there are some clear bits of information that we're finding out about how easy it is for people to do that. So there's something called the WebAIM survey that's done every few years. And over time, that survey has asked people, okay, how accessible do you think websites are? And the number, no matter how big their sample size has gotten, no matter how diverse, always stays at about 30% of people think that web accessibility is pretty good and it's going okay. And the rest of the participants and respondents don't think that's happening so well at all. Their numbers around social media accessibility are still, you know, low, but improving over time. So we seem to have hit a point where we're stagnating in terms of website accessibility, but we're starting to see some movement in terms of social media accessibility. And those of you on Facebook will know that, for instance, Facebook has just started to try and describe photo content for people who are blind or visually impaired. But then there's the issue about how we're testing websites and how we're testing accessibility. WebAIM also asks people about exactly what software they tend to use. And over time, they've gotten a bigger and bigger sample size, including more people who are a little less confident in using the internet and less confident with computers. And as that sample size has grown, they've noticed a change. When they had a big hike in the sample size for the most recent survey, they found that WindowEyes was the most popular adaptive technology. And surprise, surprise, that's because it's been tied to Microsoft Office and is now very low cost and easy for people to access. That issue of people being able to get access to good and cheap technology that helps them to get onto the internet and to use it. And significantly, they also said that this might be about ease of use, because if people have been using Windows for a long time, they're more comfortable to stay with it. They also found that Zoom Text is really, really popular, and that's about people perhaps having low vision and being able to use it for multiple purposes as their vision transitions. What they noted in this survey is that the most popular combinations, so WindowEyes or Zoom Text being used with Internet Explorer, aren't actually what you see being used in accessibility testing most of the time, because the really visible, active users who go out and ask for accessibility testing and participate in it are the people who are using things like Apple and Android, and who are really early engagers with technology. So it's important that when we're educating companies and government, we educate them about the need to make sure that they test things well.
Leah Van Poppel, CEO of Blind Citizens Australia. New Horizons is produced each week on behalf of Blind Citizens Australia, and you can contact them for any information about anything that they do. 1-800-033-660 is the phone number, and the email address is bca@bca.org.au. If you've got any comments on the program, please send them to me at new.horizons@bca.org.au. We'll bring you the rest of Leah's talk in the future, but for now, until next week, take care.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.